All right, now I'm going to have to quickly take you on over then to those final judgments. You read them in your own spare time. I don't have to comment on them. They're all going to come, just one right after the other. And remember, Jesus in Matthew 24 again likened these events of the tribulation to the woman approaching delivery. And I don't have to rehearse for you gals that have given birth. You know that those birth pangs start rather timidly and rather far apart. But as you get closer and closer to the hour of delivery, those pains get more severe and closer together, and then delivery. All right, that's exactly how Jesus describes the events of the tribulation. And you read these trumpets and you read these bold judgments, and that's what it is. It's just one getting worse and longer and closer together than the one before. Now, I haven't got time. It's already 4:45, but you know that part and parcel of this end time scenario at the end of the tribulation is the Antichrist calling, just like George Bush did a few years ago, all the armies of the world to come to the Middle East. My, when I saw Desert Storm, I thought, just a little preview, but it was a preview where one man could sit in the White House and pick up the phone and call the leaders of the world and say, send us some armed forces. We've got to get Iraq out of Kuwait. And what'd they do? They did it. Even though it might have been a few hundred from here and a few hundred from there, but nevertheless, it was a preview. Now, the Antichrist is going to do the same thing. When he sees that he cannot get rid of the Jew, he's going to call all the nation's leaders of the world and say, send your armies to the Middle East. We have to get rid of these Jews. Once we get rid of the Jew, we can have the utopia that everybody is looking for. And we can have peace and prosperity, but we got to get rid of the Jew. Now, you see, a lot of this is already building. A lot of people, even in America, are beginning to accuse the Jew, just like they did in Hitler's Germany, of controlling the wealth, of controlling business. And, now, granted, to a certain degree, they do. I mean, they're talented in those areas. But listen, they're not alone. They're not alone in this great conspiracy, if you want to call it that. The Rockefellers aren't Jews. David Rockefeller is probably the biggest mover and shaker of world government on the planet tonight, and he's not a Jew. And many of the other wealthy families, especially of our American background, the Vanderbilts and the Morgans and what have you, they weren't Jews. So don't blame the Jew by himself, although they certainly are involved in it. But all of these great wealthy families are power hungry. They are, as we were talking last night, you've heard the expression, power corrupts. Absolute power corrupts absolutely. And that's what we're seeing, these wealthy families. They are getting so hungry for world power, and they're all consorting together to bring about the world government. And, of course, the New Age people are flocking right in with it, and it's all working together for that same end. But I don't blame the Rothschilds, I don't blame the Rockefellers, and I don't blame the New Age people in particular, because it has to happen in order for the Antichrist to bring on the scene the things that he's going to do. So be a little cautious in how you accuse these people, and don't just accuse them because they're a Jew or accuse them because they're rich. They are merely caught up in the scheme of things that have to happen. All right, now then in, let's see, go back to chapter 14. I've got about 15 minutes left at most. I think we can do some of this. Revelation 14. We're at the end of the tribulation. The world has just been under constant, what shall I call it, supernatural, phenomenal attack. I think there's going to be things from outer space. In fact, the whole UFO, I think, is part and parcel of these end-time events. The panic, don't you think anything but. But it's all coming together. And now we're at the end, and now chapter 14, verse 14. And John says, I looked, and behold, a white cloud, and upon the cloud one sat like the Son of Man, having on his head a golden crown, and in his hand a sharp sickle. Now, sickles, of course, speak of harvesting. And so the angel said, verse 15, thrust in thy sickle and reap. For the time has come for you to reap. The harvest of the earth is ripe. Now the word ripe in the Greek really is overripe. It's past time, high time to get this harvesting done. All right, so then we see another angel comes in, he also having a sharp sickle, and then come down to the last part of verse 18, thrust in thy sharp sickle, gather the clusters of the vine of the earth, for her grapes are fully ripe. And the angel thrust in his sickle in the earth and gathered the vine of the earth and cast it into the great winepress of the, not the grace of God, but what? The wrath of God. And so here the symbolic analogy then is that there is going to be a place on earth in which millions of these troops of the armies of the world are going to be brought, just like putting grapes into the wine vat. And then in the ancients, when they had the grapes in the wine vat, how did they press them? They walked in them. All right, now come back with me to the book of Isaiah. Isaiah 63. 63, let's start at verse 1. Isaiah 63, verse 1. Who is this that cometh from Edom with dyed garments from Bozrah? This that is glorious in his apparel, traveling in the greatness of his strength. Who in the world are we talking about? Jesus at his second coming. This is Christ at his second coming. Verse 2. The question is, wherefore art thou red in thine apparel, and thy garments like him that treadeth where? In the wine vat. Now do you see the analogy? Just as surely as that man tramping the grapes in the ancient wine vat got grape juice all over him, Christ is pictured here as being covered not with the blood of grapes, but with the blood of his victims, mankind, whom he's going to gather into that great wine vat of his wrath. All right, verse 3. I have trodden the winepress alone, and of the people there was none with me, for I will tread them in my anger. Now, this is hard for us to comprehend because we have been hearing nothing for 2,000 years but the love of God, as it should be. But listen, God's love and grace is going to end when the church goes out. And it's now going to be God dealing with the human race in his wrath. He's had his tummy full. And you can't blame him. My, when you look at what's going on even in our beloved America, don't you wonder how long God can put up with it? I had a call from Minneapolis the other day, and just that day alone, they had 6 murders in Minneapolis and St. Paul. 6. Now, that's more than you used to see in the whole country in a year, I believe. But it's getting awful. None of us can feel safe. How many times don't you read of someone getting shot while they're sitting at a car phone? They just kill at random. All right? God's wrath is now going to fall. For the day of vengeance is in my heart, and the year of my redeemed is come. All right? Now then, if you'll come back to Revelation, we're going to wind this up, I think, by 5 o'clock. Revelation again, chapter 14. Verse 19, the angel.